you know, I would not be in favor of the Senate bill as it stands right now. I probably would also have voted against it simply and not because for any other reason other than, you know, we have so much Mid-South type of agriculture in a very, very diverse district, unlike, you know, the rest of our state. It's very interesting, but hopefully the House bill will certainly address the rice issue, will also address peanuts. We actually are producing about 30,000 acres of peanuts this year for the first time in I don't know how long, simply because of drought conditions that really impacted our peanut supply, both in Georgia and Texas from last year. So we're into it all, and so obviously we are going to be greatly impacted in a negative way by the Senate bill, our district in Missouri. The rest of the state will be fine with it, but not my district.
Right. And, you know, interestingly, we have some Arkansas farmers that are growing peanuts also this year and last year, I believe. And so peanuts are starting to really make an impact in agriculture in this area.
Well, they are, and I'm actually going to visit a peanut operation when I do my farm tour in August, simply because I've never visited one before, because we I think, had a few allotments long, long time ago, but we've not been growing them at all. So it'll be interesting, and the methods of growing, having had it described to me, it's very, very interesting how the whole process works. So I'm anxious to visit an operation, and hopefully we'll learn a lot from that. But with regard to the farm bill, and, you know, the House this week, our House Agriculture Chairman Frank Lucas of Oklahoma actually wanted to mark up our ag bill this week, and for whatever reason it got postponed because we were going to have the agriculture appropriations bill on the House floor. Now I'm told this morning that's now being postponed till after the 4th of July, so I'm not quite sure where we are. Certainly, we're going to have a different bill than the Senate, and I know that a lot of the Southern senators voted against the Senate farm bill, too, primarily because of rice and peanuts not being treated on a level playing field with the rest of the commodities.
Yeah, I know you had a hearing about, I guess, maybe a week and a half ago up in Portageville about the farm bill.
Yeah, we did, and particularly, you know, while we had most all of the commodities represented, and so many of our farmers, they're so diverse anyway. They do rice, they do cotton, they do corn, soybeans, what have you. But in this particular case, the rice guys were. Very, very direct in wanting to have some kind of a counter-cyclical program put in place so that there would be some kind of safety net for our rice producers. Obviously, crop insurance and then the shallow loss program that is the new centerpiece of the Senate farm bill won't work for us whatsoever, particularly because it won't protect against price declines that happen over multiple years. And, you know, I mean, that might work for some commodities, but for us, we just need to have some kind of counter-cyclical policy that gives us a true price loss coverage option. Otherwise, our rice guys are going to be left out in the cold.
Well, you mentioned the House Farm Bill getting pushed back until after the 4th. Are you worried that it may continue to be pushed back and pushed back?
Well, I don't. There would be no reason, and this is what's very convoluted to me. And you know, our leadership, obviously, they've got a little agriculture probably in their districts, but not to the extent that we do. And it's something that I'm going to have to find out about, because when I left Washington last Friday, or I think it was Friday, yes, we were doing ag approps this week, and we were doing you know, the markup of the farm bill as soon as we got back from the 4th of July. I still feel pretty good, Mark, that the House can get a farm bill done before we go on when we come home for our August break. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of time to do it, and we'll just have to see. I don't know what has sort of stood in the way here. of us moving forward on it.
Well, of course, there's always federal budget matters that the House is working on. I know you've got a proposal to cut budgets of several agencies, actually, to the tune of about $2 billion that would be cut from the federal budget that's been moving along through committee.
Yeah, I chair the Financial Services and General Government Subcommittee of Appropriations, and as such, we have the Treasury Department, we have the Internal Revenue Service, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the General Services Administration, and a lot of independent agencies, both financial and non-financial oriented. And it's quite, important that as much as we can, we get discretionary spending under control. Certainly, we've made some hard cuts for the first time in the last 2 years. We've cut about $2 billion out of our budget. Last year, I was able to get $1.5 billion cut from the IRS. This year, probably $985 million-ish. We also put a couple of riders on there preventing the IRS from spending any money on implementing Obamacare and also not allowing them to accept money from the Department of Health and Human Services for implementation of the health care law. Because we wouldn't give them money for it last year, they took it from a fund that the Department of Health and Human Services has. And the way that you get around, because the HHS secretary has about $1 billion slush fund to pay out for purposes of health care implementation, they were able to tap into that. But we aren't going to allow them to do it per our bill. But then again, once we find out what the Supreme Court does on Thursday, it may be a moot point anyway, in which case we could probably find even more savings beyond what we already have. And we also made some substantial cuts to the General Services Administration, who, employees in their western region took a boondoggle, made up a boondoggle conference out in Las Vegas that spent almost $1 million, which was outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And, we just simply cut their funds quite substantially, about 20% in some categories, primarily not only to give them the message, but also we have now line items their budget so that they can't hide the money like they were doing before. I mean, it's an outrage, and there's no excuse for it, and the American public demands accountability and transparency, and we certainly weren't getting that. So we're doing our best to fix that problem, too.
Yeah, and on that point, I don't think a lot of people would have an argument. you mentioned the Supreme Court decision coming up, expected to be on Thursday, on the federal health care law. This is bound to have a significant impact no matter what that decision turns out to be.
It is. Obviously, if, there are probably two or three different scenarios. I mean, one, the court could uphold the entire law, in which case we still aren't going to have enough money to pay for it. And the American people will be outraged that they're being told by the federal government that you must have insurance or your health insurance or you're going to have to pay a penalty. I think a lot of business people that I've talked to, small, medium, and large, have all stopped any kind of hiring beyond 50 employees, primarily so that they don't have to go into a new category, in which case they're held accountable for their employees' health care and or else have to pay a $2,000 per employee fine. And I was just at a company the other day that actually, they've got more work that they can handle, and this is a good thing because we don't see that in many cases these days, but they're not hiring any more people until they find out what happened. So it could get upheld. It originally was supposedly going to cost under $1 trillion. Now it's been scored by the Congressional Budget Office at $1.76 trillion. We can't afford it, Mark. I mean, we just simply can't afford yet one more new entitlement. That's the part of the budget, the mandatory spending that requires us to really, really work hard to reduce those. That's where all the big money is. Perhaps the court upholds part of the law and throws out the individual mandate. Well, there's no way to pay for it because the individual mandate and the penalties on the people who were required to buy health insurance were supposed to, that was going to help pay for the health care law, plus another $500 billion, I might add, in cuts to Medicare. So it gets thrown out, then those cuts don't happen. And we can, and then the third piece of it, which is really tough, and tough for our state of Missouri, and I know for Arkansas as well, is that there will be a huge expansion of Medicaid, in which case people who are making, a family of four making up to 400% of poverty would actually be allowed to participate in Medicaid. And I know that Missouri could be looking at somewhere between $1.2 and $1.7 billion of extra expense by the year 2019 when the federal government would stop subsidizing. But the bottom line is we don't have the money for any of this. We shouldn't be doing it. There are a lot of ways to bring competition into the marketplace for health care, none of which we have were accomplished in the health care law that was passed a couple of years ago.
Well, and you said, I believe in one of your columns or somewhere I read that the Affordable Care Act is the best argument for smaller, less intrusive government. One of the concerns that I think a lot of people have, though, is that without some type of government oversight or regulation, doesn't the big money and influence of the pharmaceutical lobby, the big insurance companies, and the for-profit healthcare industry have free reign to just charge whatever they want, deny coverage capriciously, take decisions out of the hands of doctors and patients?
Well, there is an argument on that side, and the other argument would be, okay, then why don't we lift state regulation of health insurance and allow people to buy health insurance across state lines? That would actually really bring competition into the marketplace, because let's just say you've got a Blue Cross Blue Shield, you've got a United Healthcare, you've got Humana and the like, all playing a little bit in your state. But, you know, Missouri, for example, are obviously, Blue Cross Blue Shield has the biggest portion of coverages in our state. But when a particular company has, you know, I don't want to say it's a total monopoly, because United Healthcare plays pretty heavily in Missouri too. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that if I could find another health insurance policy in Arkansas, for example, to give me the exact same coverage for, let's say, $500 less a year, why shouldn't I be able to buy it in Arkansas? And so by opening up, perhaps doing some kind of limited federal charter as opposed to state charter of health insurance, you can buy insurance across state lines. The pharmaceutical industry cut a deal with the Obama administration so that people would be forced to take brand name drugs instead of generic drugs. I mean, we could save $54 billion over 5 years simply by increasing the generic utilization by 10%. It's ridiculous, but unfortunately, you do have the pharma companies and you do have others who have been able to manipulate the system, and it's not as hard to fix as people would like. You just have to be able to strong enough and say no, and that's what we owe the American people, is, and to have accountability, have transparency, but more than anything, to have competition and a free market at work here, which is not happening. When you consider the fact that the largest amount of money that we spend as a country is on health care, and it's, you know, Medicare, and those prices are everything, every insurance company sets its prices to what Medicare reimbursements are. And that's got to all change. It's a very difficult thing to do, but people have to be willing to do it, because we cannot balance our budget if we can't get health care costs under control, Mark.
Well, you know, there's a lot of other topics I wanted to get to. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time, and I'm going to have to put some of these off until next month, but we will talk to you again in a few weeks.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Congresswoman Joanne Emerson represents the 8th District in Southeast Missouri. She joins us from her office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.